Evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's August 23rd, 2021 fellow city council meeting. You'd all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and for wisdom as our city council makes its decisions tonight. Now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to move to item 1D, which is our roll call tonight. And Angel Garza is absent, and he is asked to be excused. I'd entertain a motion tonight to excuse Angel Garza from our meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And I was checking to see Maria Quesada. Councilwoman, are you present tonight? Maria? Okay. No response. So Councilwoman Maria Quesada had texted me last night, and apparently there had been 4 COVID cases in one of her branches in Hood River, and she asked to be excused if she couldn't make the phone call. So I'd entertain a motion to excuse tonight Maria from our proceedings.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to move to item 1E, which is our citizen input. This is the segment of the city council meeting where we ask members of the public if they want to address the city council. And I see Sean Bates is a willing participant. So Sean, do you want to state your name and address for the record, please?
For the record, my name is Sean Bates. I live at 1156 East Juniper Street here in Othello. Very briefly, I would like to ask you council members and the city to please consider adoption of a golf cart ordinance for the city of Othello. I've looked through the Othello Municipal Code. There is no provision for golf carts. There's electric skateboards, scooters, ATVs that are allowed as a banshee, all kinds of fun stuff on the streets, but I want to have something that's slow and boring. So, and I want to buy a nice little green license plate for it and have everything squared away with the world. So that is all. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Is there anyone else tonight who would like to address the city council? Okay, seeing none, I'll move to the approval of our agenda tonight on item 2.
Make a motion to approve the agenda tonight.
You. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to our consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
I'll make the motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'll move to our current business. And the first item on our business is a proclamation to honor Ruben Martinez. And I understand there's some representatives. I want to welcome you first, family of Ruben Martinez. Ruben was a very, we went to school together and all through our school years. He was a particularly good friend. He was really memorable. When Ruben laughed, everybody laughed. And he just had this wonderful way of showing his kindness and his concern for other people. His concern wasn't about himself, but one of the things that I remember a lot about Ruben was is that he did a lot of things to improve himself, and by doing that, he also did things to improve this community. And I'm proud to call him a lifelong friend, and I'm just so honored to have you guys here tonight And if you noticed out front, the flag is hanging at half mast. It's going to, American flag is going to fly at half mast all week in honor of Reuben, whether he's your father, brother, mother, or whatever relationship or friend you are to Reuben. I want you to know that the city is going to take the time to honor a good man who spent a lot and most of his life pouring out to this community. And I am just really thrilled to have you guys all here tonight. So with that, I want to issue this proclamation. I want to call up the family members who are going to be representing. Melinda, you said yourself, Reuben Jr. and David. So this is a proclamation of the mayor of the city of Othello. And this proclamation is to recognize the tremendous impact the life of Reuben Martinez has had on the citizens of Othello. Whereas Reuben Martinez spent almost his entire life living in the city of Othello. And whereas Reuben gave a large portion of his life to the wrestling community. And whereas Reuben credits some of his greatest moments to winning an individual state wrestling title for Othello High School in 1978, and as a coach for Othello High School for 20 years. Teams Reuben coached won 2 state team titles and had 13 top 10 finishes in 20 years. And whereas Reuben's coaching career was highlighted by being awarded multiple league, regional, and state Coach of the Year honors, Reuben was inducted into the Washington State Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2015. And whereas Reuben volunteered much of his life helping the youth of Othello, where he often saw potential in kids they didn't see in themselves, he was a force for good and had a lasting legacy upon the youth of Othello. And whereas Reuben's impact on his family and friends will never be forgotten, and to honor him in light of his passing, the city of Othello will fly the flag in front of City Hall at half mast every day through Friday, August 27th, this year, 2021. And now, therefore, I, Sean Logan, Mayor of Othello, do hereby proclaim that Reuben Martinez be recognized and acknowledged by the community for his tremendous impact on the citizens of Othello. Signed this 23rd day of August, 2021, by Mayor Sean Logan. And signed with the city seal. Is there anything that the family would like to say?
Well, I'd like to say, Reuben wasn't just my dad, he was my coach and one of my teachers. I couldn't think of a lot of stories about my dad my whole life. So my dad was already a legend and here to me by the time I was 5 years old. I know how much impact he had on everybody because I see it every day. I see it on Facebook, I see it on Instagram, and I'm gonna miss him a lot. I know everybody else is going to. I know the rest of the world is gonna miss him. I know all the students, they're adding this. I'm
just glad they're here for me. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Stories, but I'm going to save those for Let's move now to item 4B, and Spencer has a budget calendar update for us.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I have a quick update for you. I want to do two things. One is give you a brief overview of the budget calendar to finish out the year, what it looks like leading up to December when we'll finally pass our budget. And then the second one was I wanted to introduce our the council committee schedule and see what works for you. I'm not looking for any decisions tonight. I just want to give it to you. Then we can come back at our next meeting and hit that up. So first of all, with our budget schedule, we've started internally with our department at the department head level with our budgets. July and September, we're working with department heads to develop budget expectations for 21 to end out 21 and then new budgets for 2022. September and October, we'll meet with the various budget committees to review the sections of the budget piece at a time. And then November is when we bring everything back together. We'll usually have we'll have one meeting where we just discuss red zone items, and then we'll have two other meetings where we say yes and no to different items, talk about priorities. And then likely in December, our first or second meeting in December is when we'll actually pass the budget for 2022. That is the brief calendar. And then the next item is the committee schedule. I attached a copy here. I've got seven different meetings coming up. And again, I'm not looking for decisions tonight. I put together a rough draft. I grabbed the names that were on the different meetings from last year. If things work for you, then great. If things don't work for you, talk amongst yourselves and with me, and we can do some switching around. And I envision probably bringing this back next week, and then we can talk about what works and doesn't work, and those kinds of things. That's all I have as far as budget tonight. Very high-level introductory. If you have any questions, I can take those.
Council?
And then, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we can just talk about it, but I just saw a committee or a budget committee that I was on last year that I think there was a mix-up on law enforcement.
Okay.
I wasn't listed on there this year.
And law enforcement, well.
Yeah, Mark wasn't on there last year, I was.
Would you want to make that switch right now? Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to be on
it again. Yeah, I can do that. That'll be switched, and I'll have that switched when we see the schedule next week again, too. But that's all I have. You can take it, look at your personal calendars, and see what works.
Excellent. Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you.
The next item is 4C, which is the sewer lab equipment purchases, and our wastewater level 2 operator is Jim Laird.
And Jim, as you guys know, we're trying to get our lab accredited again. So everything in that lab has been there 20 plus years. It's obsolete. So we're going to get accredited to do chlorine, DO, pH, BOD, fecals, and total suspended solids. But to do that, we have to have the lab up and running, per se, before they'll, because the state will come and inspect it. And to do that, we need some money. So we threw out a figure of $75,000. Will we use that? We don't know. You guys have a list of all the stuff on there. The big ticket items, the prices are there. And that alone on the big ticket's $30,000. So there's a lot more we're going to need. But we're just looking for approval to start purchasing equipment so we can get this process rolling.
So you're going to be asked this question, so you might as well get it from me. Explain to us, what is the advantage for you doing it versus having it done by an accredited lab?
I'm assuming expenses. I don't know what we spend a year on labs per quote, but we take everything to quote right now. And Spencer would have to tell me that dollar figure. And once we get the stuff there, you're going to be buying supplies in the lab and our time. will analyze this. The monthly metals test that we do, and that's an intern deal for this permit cycle, it's huge. We will never do those. Those are way above the scope. But the twice a week samples that you see on this sheet, that's what we'll do in-house.
Well, the answer I was expecting to hear would be that you would be doing more testing so that you can make adjustments and corrections in the system, so your expense would be greater if you were trying to manipulate the system and doing it.
We're doing the testing that Diana Washington is requiring us to do right now, and that's these tests, twice a week.
Okay, so that's all you're doing it for, is to fulfill
the
permit requirements.
Exactly.
But those permit requirements could change, you know, if it goes to a mechanical plant. Also, right now, even though they're taking all of the samples to flow, you're still paying their time, too, because they're having to go out and take the samples.
Correct. But we're not paying for them to spend the time doing the testing. But you're not going to be doing any more testing if you have the lab equipment. You're going to be doing the same tests.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what John was getting at is that... Are you going to, you have the required test that you're supposed to send in twice a week, but maybe we do another test, we do an extra test on Monday morning just to see where we're at, and another one Tuesday afternoon to see where we're at.
And if we need to
make some adjustments before we get our final 3-2 in to the state, to the system, whether we add more chlorine or whether we add more acid or whether, isn't that what you were really getting at?
Yeah. Because when you take it to a lab, the turnaround time is usually... You know, 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, it's longer than what you can do to adjust your plant. And that will become critical once you have a mechanical plant.
Yes. Our turnaround time right now for our metals is close to a month.
Yeah. So you're not getting accurate enough information.
But you're not doing metal testing anyway.
No,
we're not doing metal testing anyway. But even the regular tests are like a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
so you're not getting... things in real enough time to be able to do any kind of adjustments in the plant.
So, okay, look, here's my stance on it. You want to spend $75,000 on this. You're going to have extra manpower time. How many, what would you tell me an extra, how many hours a week?
Tuesdays and Thursdays, you're going to have 1 to 2 guys out there 2/3 of the day.
It's additional on what you're doing now.
Yeah. Right now,
day and a half time a week for a manpower. You've got any kind of changes, the equipment's going to have to be replaced. You've got disposable supplies that's got to be replaced on a yearly basis. The numbers don't justify spending the money.
All right, but Corey, also remember, when initially this lab was put together back when I first started.
I understand that, but it's not being used now.
We had to bring the equipment in the lab up to standards then.
And that's why the city lost accreditation. Correct?
No.
Okay, why did the city lose accreditation?
There was a multitude of things stemming to Diana Washington. Mm-hmm. She came in, she didn't like the way things were going, the way things were doing it. I personally did the same test for 15 years.
Yeah.
And she's the one that said, no, you're not doing this.
So
we basically, their testing results at the lab indicated they never should have lost their accreditation because he never failed a test that was done on a blind. There's a set of blind tests you have to do, what, yearly or semi-annually or something like that. They never should have lost their accreditation. She just decided that for some reason that we shouldn't be accredited.
So, go ahead. But anyway, so the numbers don't justify it. They just don't. You know, 18 and 19, we spent $20,000 a year with Quo. Now, understand, that's for heavy metal testing. That's for all the water testing. That's for all the sewer testing. The water testing, the heavy metal testing, that's all still going to Quo. So, you know, that 20 grand for the 2 years. This year, as of right now, the city spent 10 grand with Quo. Last year the city spent 32,000.
but there was also additional testing that had to be done was it for the APA or something? There was a bunch of additional testing that had to be done.
Mm-hmm. I think that's still going on, is it not?
Yeah.
So if you amortize this out, it's actually cheaper. I'm just doing, but don't quote me on that. I'm back of the envelope right now. But if you amortize this out over a 10-year investment, and I wouldn't base any of it on the consumables because they're going to be consumables and everything.
Consumables, and
my question is the $75,000.
But are you taking into account employee time? Are you talking?
Absolutely.
At some point in time, you're going to have to. Your employee time is going to have to increase.
We're paying them to be here anyway. Hear me out. The employees are being paid to be there. I know that initially is a shocker, but if there is time where they have downtime, do you ever have down? I'm not putting you on the spot like that, Jim. I'm so sorry.
They
have downtime.
Are quick. Will never fly with.
So I've watched these labs run in other small towns, Cooley Dam for one instance, and they couldn't sing the praises enough that they spent a whole ton of money when they just built their new one, because it was going to be hell or high water before they ever sent anything out that they didn't have to send out. So, because he said it was leaps and bounds over. Now I'm going back of the envelope. My question is the roughly 50,000 you show on here, there's an additional 25,000. Is that fluff money? Because it wouldn't be fiscally responsible to vote on fluff money.
Yeah.
But I mean, is there money that would be dedicated to? You just don't have it listed, or
on these sheets? We need everything on those sheets at some point.
And that's 50 grand roughly.
We may not have everything on those sheets. I kind of went down the tests and everything off the top of my head that I could remember for all these tests, you know, I may have missed something. But Jim and I sat down and it was like we aimed high. We don't expect to spend all $75,000. We're just trying to give ourselves a high enough cap that we can come in under that and be able to take care of all of this.
What is the, I mean, 33% above what you're asking for on here is pretty large. So what would be that cap? I mean, is it definitely a $75,000 cap that you're asking for? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to exceed.
And I don't think we're going to come.
Yeah, well, if the money's there, sometimes it's easy to spend.
Well, and you put, like I said, you put lab in front of anything and you can see the prices.
I won't argue that.
And that's the point that I'm trying to make. Any of this equipment breaks, we replace that.
Yes, we
do. Quo breaks a piece of equipment, they replace it. You know, the numbers here, they don't just... I wish I could have got the breakdown of exactly the difference.
The other thing that you're not taking into account is that when we have operators that are down there doing the job and they're maintaining the plant and they're having to figure out what's going on, the testing and the knowledge of that testing and being able to relate that to what's going on in the plant is invaluable. And that is something they need to be doing.
They're getting the results from Quo, the same results they're going to get if they do it themselves.
Two weeks after the fact.
Okay, but what Jim said, though, is they send it into Quo, they don't get the results back for 2 weeks.
It's going to be the same with you guys. You guys are going to have the same turnaround time.
No, you can get quicker results.
How are you getting quicker results?
Because we test them that day.
They have lab equipment.
Yes, we'll test that day. The only result we won't get in the same day is a BOD because that's a 5-day test.
So Quo is holding off on. Sometimes I've got testing when they get it.
Mm-hmm. So I
don't know why that is unless they've changed. But my boy used to work at Quo. They got stuff to test in. It was done that day, whether they were there 15 hours or whether they were there 20 hours. Those tests were done.
The tests are done. The results aren't to me, though. And they email me the results. Some days I'll take them in on a Thursday and I'll get them the following Monday. Some days I'll take them in on a Thursday and I'll have to call the last week of the month so I get the results from my report.
That's true, Corey. Same thing happens to me. Mm-hmm.
No, I believe you.
Same thing happens with most labs that you take it into.
I want to make this statement. Our waste treatment plant right now today is not in compliance with the state of Washington Department of Ecology. We need to show that we're moving in the right direction to get accredited lab, and that we're doing something moving forward to get this permit situation cleared up. And I believe it'll give you the tools to make adjustments, and definitely you're going to need it if you put anything mechanical in.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right now, to make adjustments to that treatment plant is impossible. There is no adjustment. It is Mother Nature. What it does, it does. Until we add some mechanical components to that, we can't change a thing.
So we just keep throwing money at it, and EPA is going to say, oh, you're spending money, so you're doing something. Whether that money is...
I don't think this is money thrown away.
No.
This is money well spent.
This will be used for testing in the lagoons, and if and when we build mechanical components or mechanical plant, every piece of this equipment will be able to be utilized in that plant. This isn't throwaway. This isn't, oh, well, we're throwing a bunch of money at this right now, but we're not going to use it later if we change the plant. Every piece of this equipment will be able to use, and much of it, you should be able to expand. We don't have ammonia on the list. If ammonia is a test that they start requiring us to do on a regular basis, that is something that we can do with the spectrophotometer that will be purchased.
Ammonia is required twice a week.
Yeah. So it.
So if that's required, then why is it in there?
These things, well, that's just a matter of adding the tests and getting the consumables, the reagents, and the chemicals that you need to do that test, and learning, and then learning that test. But right now we're focusing on the big ones that we need to do. We can always add those later.
So... Just you know, my mind. I'm not a no. I mean, I'm not a no. I'm not a yes. I'm leaning harder towards no because it's just hard to spend $75,000 when we're getting it done cheaper. But let me ask one more question.
This is a cap. This is a not to exceed. We tried to make sure that we went high enough that we could cover everything, but we're probably not going to come close.
So if you're going to be doing testing there, and I understand that the metal testing that's out. But if you're going to be sending stuff to Quo anyways, and you're going to be building this, why don't you build it so you're not sending anything else to Quo other than the heavy metals?
That's the goal.
So why are we only doing it partially instead of doing it?
Because I need to get them trained on these things first. And these are the big ones, the ones that they are going to be doing all the time. We can add on ammonia when we get this.
So what else is going to be needed to add on?
None. This equipment should be able to do those tests. Ammonia is done with a bunch of chemicals and the spectrophotometer. So it's just a matter of running that test. But right now we're focusing on PHDO, BOD, TSS, Fecal, did I miss with chlorine? Those are the big ones on our permit that we want to get them accredited for first. Then we could look at additional.
Yes. Is there any other questions?
Because they're not running those tests now. They need to be trained for them.
Okay. Is there any other statements?
Yeah. Just be ready, because there's probably a $2.5 million to $3 million budget number coming up for building a clarifier to take care of the TSS.
Is that $2.5 or $3 million going to go into the final plant that we're going to end up building?
Yes. It would be a solid settling clarifier prior to discharge that you could pull the sludge out of.
Because I'm telling you, this throwing a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there and a little
this
bit of money.
This isn't throwing
here,
it though.
That isn't working towards a final plan that we need to be working for. Well, the final plan we need to be working towards is building a new plant out there.
Have we started construction on the chlorine?
No, not yet.
When's the plan?
I just signed. Go ahead, Sean. Do you want to give an update?
So, yeah, I got an email. So the project that you signed was Ash Street today. The contractor has mailed off. We got their insurance paperwork, and they have mailed the contracts today, so we should have them tomorrow. And then we'll send them to our attorney to get signed. So we just awarded it, I think, last council meeting. So.
Ash Street? Or?
No.
He
signed contracts today, but that's Ash Street.
I misheard.
But the chlorination, the disinfection project, was a week and a half, I think, behind, or a week behind. So it's coming. Contracts are in the mail, and we'll get those awarded, and we'll get construction going hopefully in the middle of next month.
September?
Yeah. September. So they're required to get the concrete pads, the area where the tanks are going to be placed, get that work completed so that we beat winter. And then lead times is what we're working on as far as the pumps and everything else, that the skids that are going to be injecting the chemicals. Unknown right now on what the lead time is, but they can get a shutdown until that equipment is delivered. So that work can go through the winter.
Thank you, Sean.
So one last comment. I agree.
I agree with Councilman
Everett. I'd like to see some sort of plan moving forward on what our long-term goals are to implement a mechanical plant or whatever the fix is, and just it makes it more palatable to keep invest. I'm not throwing money away, but investing money into this. If we had a vision of what everybody else is seeing, which I think you guys have, maybe we just need to have that discussion.
Well, I don't think that this is throwing money away. I'm going to vote yes on it, but I want it justified. I mean,
fair enough.
You know, it just.
No judgment here.
I'm glad you get into it like that. I'm glad you do that. I am. I think it's really great.
You know, it just.
You're right. And I think that a committee meeting for water sewer should be held. You should be explaining to us what the permit violations were and the things that we need to correct immediately with regard to what the treatment plant is not doing, so that we can make a educated decision on what we should be spending our money on coming forward in the future. Like 2 years from now, we should have a completed clarifier sitting on the end of the discharge for the final effluent and pick up the TSS. Okay? That's only one component of a waste treatment plant, and you can do a lot of things in front of that, but you'll end up needing that polishing clarifier before it enters into the creek.
So we're happy to put that together. Part of the challenge for Jim, engineering staff, is that in the meantime, while we're trying to make the long-term plans and work that out, we haven't decided, one, what engineering firm we're going to use to do that with. We haven't decided what direction we, when I say we, I mean staff and or the council, we haven't even gotten to that. A lot of it is because we're just scrambling just to meet the NPDES permit, and there's a process here. And so sometimes, you know, as the mayor, I want to get to the final solution. Don't give me all these details. I just want to know where we're headed with the final solution. In this particular instance, there is a final solution, but there's also many different final solutions that this city needs to take a look at. And in the meantime, we have permit requirements that we have to continue to work on. And this is what staff has been doing. And so, but I'm happy to put together a committee meeting. Let's do an update. We'll go over all the where we were in violation, where we're continuing to be in violation. And maybe that would be a good time to bring Varela in and Allison in on that conversation as well. So those are our consulting engineers.
Well, I think that we should, as a city, conceptualize what we want to do and identify the space we have available to us. Right now we got a series of four ponds. You'll probably end up filling in one pond and utilizing that space for the start of your headworks.
That'd be my guess.
And then you'll move to the next one and you'll put in anaerobic reactors.
I'm pretty sure a mechanical plant will fit on the footprint of one of those ponds, the big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, what, you know, from start to finish, let's conceptualize what we want to be able to do at the least amount of expense and get the best treatment possible. And then we bring the engineers in. Then we tell the engineers, here's our concept. This is what we want you to do. Now design it. Mm-hmm. And then we go out to bid and figure out what's going to cost.
Okay. Let's get back to our agenda item, and that's the purchase of this sewer lab equipment. Is there any more discussion on it? I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the request for $75,000 not to exceed for the purchase of the lab equipment.
Second. We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Council. Thank
can
you, Jim.
Can I ask one more question? How long is it going to take?
To get the equipment?
To get accredited.
To get accredited. We're in line right now for the DOPH chlorine. And then once we have the equipment to be able to do the testing and show that we've got everything in and get our SOPs updated and everything, then we'll go for the BOD TSS people.
How much free time do you actually have?
I'm expecting, and they know that we have a deadline of September 30th, but I'm expecting to hear from them anytime now. We're just kind of waiting on DOE Manchester, it's the lab accreditation branch. So we're just kind of in limbo right now waiting for them.
Okay, so let's move on in our agenda. Tonight we have the pleasure of having the mobility manager of People for People, Rosenda Henley, and she's going to give the City Council an update on their services in the community. Rosenda?
Well, thank you for having me this evening. My name is Rosenda Henley, and I'm with People for People. We offer transportation services in Adams, Grant, and Lincoln counties. Our office is out of Moses Lake, and the way our organization is structured is we have our driver supervisor who oversees the drivers, the mobility manager, which is my position, and I oversee community outreach and gaps in transportation services, and we have our regional manager who oversees my position in the driver supervisor. My goals tonight are to establish a relationship with you all, to request funding, and to ask for your assistance in helping us spread the word about our services. I also am going to, I have an ask that you please consider us for the ARPA funding, which we can possibly be candidates for. And with that, I will start my presentation.
Thank you, Lucinda.
So we are in, I don't know if you guys have seen our buses. So People for People is in Othello. And so what we currently do is we take people to work, we take them to their medical appointments, to the grocery store to visit families, and we also go to the Tri-Cities, to Ritzville, and go to Moses Lake. Our services are open to the general public, so we have different services in this area. We have our demand response, which is for those people who are not able to make it to a bus stop, then they call us a day in advance, and we pick them up at their home, and then we take them wherever it is that they need to go. And then we have our community connectors, which is Route 102, and that's the one that goes from Moses Lake, Warden, Othello, Connell, Mesa, Tri-Cities, and we have two shuttles that do that. One starts out of Othello, the second one starts out of Moses Lake. And then we have our Route 103, which is comes from Ritzville into Othello, and then vice versa. And that one only is on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that one is only if people call and request the service. We used to run it on a fixed route, but on a fixed run, scheduled time, but we didn't have any ridership. So then we decided to change it as a demand response on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then we have our Route 104, which is Othello, Warden, and Moses Lake. And that one does a few trips throughout Othello. All of these services, and then we have our reservation only, which is Route 103, the one from Ritzville to Othello, and Route 106, which brings people in from Odessa, Ritzville, into Moses Lake, and then at Othello if they need it. We also have Medicaid clients who are, we don't provide the service, but we are contracted with special mobility services. So if a person has Medicaid, then they call SMS and then they'll send us a trip.
Can I stop you? So someone's disabled and they're elderly and they need to go to the doctor, but they don't have the, you know, they don't have anybody at their home that can get them into a car to get them. Do you guys have the ability to provide assistance to them to get them in a wheelchair and get them onto the people per people bus?
So we do not provide assistance getting them into the wheelchair. We just help with our funding. We are able to help them from their front door to our bus.
Front door to the bus.
Mm-hmm. And so we do have our lifts on the bus, and our buses have the capacity of two wheelchairs, and these services are open to the general public and they're fare free. So just because they do not have Medicaid, it does not mean that they are not eligible to use their services. We do have to ask if they have Medicaid, just because if they do, we do need to at least try and say, hey, call special mobility services just out of courtesy. And for whatever reason, if they are not calling, they have to call Medicaid or special mobility services 2 days in advance. But if for whatever reason, they were not able to get a hold of them 2 days in advance, and then it's their appointments the following day, they can call us and we provide the service. And then, sorry, any questions on the other slide? And then mobility manager, travel trainer. So again, what I do is I go and do, I search to see where there are community events. We go and then we register, we go to those events, and then we provide information about our services to anybody who will listen. And then we also do travel training. So if somebody doesn't know how to ride the bus or they don't feel comfortable using it on their own, then I go and ride the bus with them. I have gone to the Tri-Cities, to Wenatchee, and to Ritzville to use the services with them, because not a lot of people feel comfortable using the service. They're afraid that they're going to get lost, especially going into the Tri-Cities. And then who's eligible to ride our services? Anyone. Anybody. Again, the service is open to the general public and it's fare free. And they can, so as long as they are 11 years and older, they're able to use the service on their own. And our statistics are, so our boardings from June 2020 to 2021, and there's a comparison there. So with COVID, our ridership went down quite a bit. And then 2019 to 2020. And then June 2020 to 2021, it increased a little bit. The miles, though, they are still a lot, because what we started doing is, since we weren't able to provide transportation for individuals, then what we started doing is we started calling the food bank, the senior centers, and asking if they had any, or if they needed any assistance transporting meals to the seniors or people out in Hatton and Lynn. So since last year, we have been delivering meals to Hatton and to Lynn for individuals to have access to food. And then we have the Greater Columbia 211. And 211 is a resource call center. So that one, we encourage every organization to call and register, because if anybody from this area or even Spokane calls, or any area calls and say, hey, what are the resources available in Adams County? Then they are able to pull up the resources and refer them to the agencies. And this is free. And then once a year, the Resource Data Center will email the organization and say, hey, there's this, please verify that your information is updated. And then this is our service area map. So we have our Greater Columbia 211, and then we have our basic food outreach program, which 211 can also help with that. If people needed assistance with food, then they can also help them fill out the application over the phone. As of recently, they started helping with if they needed assistance with rent to fill out the application as well. And they get a live operator, so they don't have to leave a message and they just have to call 211. And then that's it for me. Any questions?
Is that you are requesting, you said you're going to make a request.
I am requesting $5,000. Our service hours are 60, it's what we charge is six, what it is $64 an hour per service hour.
How many people from here use your service?
When I spoke to our scheduler today, she said that as of yesterday, we were at 2,000 boardings.
For 1 year? Out of Othello?
Oh, no, no, for last month and this month.
How many out of Othello?
Out of Othello, it is, let me show you. So for this, for the year of 2020 and 2021, it is 3,617.
Oh, I apologize. I thought that was your entire service.
Oh,
Wow. So people, you know, one of the things that the ARPA funds are for are to allocate, there's a lot of reasons that they have, and one of them is to provide assistance to the community. I don't know, sitting here today, whether we can use ARPA funds, but if we can, people for people, and Lucinda is asking us for $5,000 to help assist with their program. So I think that we should consider that. Yeah, they provide a good service to the community. And
for that many people, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people for a free service.
Yeah. So, okay. Any questions for Lucinda? Awesome. Thank you very much, Lucinda.
Thank you.
We'll be considering that during our ARPA discussions.
Yes.
Okay. So that wasn't a no, Rosita. That was a considerate. No.
So Rosinda, I'll get back to you as we move further in our ARPA discussions and decisions. So.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Tonight, we also have the pleasure of having the Executive Director of the Columbia Basin Development League, Vicki Charlo. And Vicki, we want to welcome you. And you have a presentation and also an ask, I believe.
It seems to be a trend tonight.
Yes, it does.
So hello, thank you very much for your time. So to Mayor Logan and the council members, I wish the rest of the crowd could be here because part of what I'm doing is giving a little background about why we exist at all and frankly probably why Othello exists. But also it's nice to see old board members here too. So my name is Vicki Charlo. I'm the executive director of the Columbia Basin Development League and have been for probably a decade now. The organization, well here, let me see if this works. It does. So the organization was created formally in the early 1960s, but it was really started probably in the late 50s. And we were talking about where I'm from. I said, well, I'm on the other side of Wenatchee. Like, Wenatchee, it's not even the Columbia Basin in the region. I'm like, well, no, but had it not been for that little newspaper in Wenatchee, there's a lot of things that wouldn't have happened in the Columbia Basin area. So the Wenatchee World had a lot to do with what happened in the region as it was being developed. And we'll talk a little bit more about that earlier. But our organization is nonprofit and we're completely stakeholder driven. So our board is 30 members large, which is huge. But we represent all the communities in the region, and I'll get into the region in a minute. But our job is really to advocate at the state and federal level for all things Columbia Basin Project. So we have both a short-term effort and a long-term effort, because the short-term effort's really getting in the way of what we're trying to accomplish in the long-term. So we can't go any further in terms of finishing the Columbia Basin Project, maybe in our lifetimes, maybe in somebody who's really young, might see it in their lifetime, but probably not in mine. In the short term, we need some help with the Odessa Aquifer. So just in terms of reference, I guess maybe for the audience too that might be learning or hearing this for the first time, the Columbia Basin Project goes from way up in the north there in that green area, Grand Coulee Dam, all the way down the Tri-Cities, over to the, well, actually to Quincy, and then the far right, just almost to the Ritzville area. So that all started thanks to the Grand Coulee Dam and the construction of that, because without that, we couldn't get water for any kind of irrigation, which comes from behind the dam. So in 2002, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation,
the Reclamation Act, was created for water storage and irrigation networks all throughout the U.S. And the idea was to convert desolate, as they had other names for it, but desolate desert for habitation and cultivation. They wanted to bring people out here, and they wanted a farm. They wanted to take sagebrush and rattlesnakes, push them aside, and put in agriculture, which would build communities. So in 33, the funds were finally appropriated, thanks to President Roosevelt, to build the Grand Coulee Dam, but with the idea of this was for jobs and for power. In 43, the Columbia Basin Project was finally authorized by Congress, even though they had been working on it for a couple decades before that. So the whole idea behind the Columbia Basin Project is all about irrigation. Now, the key to all this is within that little red circle you see up there. That little red circle are these. It's 12 pumps that lift water from Lake Roosevelt to Banks Lake for irrigation. So it's for storage. It's a reservoir. But it also, six of these guys are reversible. So there, you can bring irrigation water up, and you can turn them around, and you can pump and create electricity when they go down. So dual purpose. So the Columbia Basin Project is truly the single reason most communities in this region exist, including this one. And I can see that you were established in 1910, so somebody had the foresight to like put town down before the water actually even came into the majority of this area. So just to kind of remind us about the magnitude of this project, that's a full-size pickup in that canal. This thing is huge and carries a lot of water. Too bad there aren't kids here. I would have to take this moment to say, this is why your parents tell you not to swim and play anywhere near a lateral or a canal, because of this, and this water really moves. Because it does this. It makes things green. It brings irrigation water in, builds farms, builds communities, which of course then allows you to exist. Bonus fact, most of this water is used twice. So when we talk about being an environmental project, we kind of think we've been one from the beginning and from the design phase. Because Potholes Reservoir collects a lot of that water from the project in the north so that it can be used to farms in the south, which is a huge impact. I remind the Tri-Cities of this on a regular basis, that they too can say thank you for the Columbia Basin Project. Sometimes they forget that. 1948 was the first irrigation water pump from the Columbia River. And by the way, it went down to 5,400 acres near Pasco. In 52, the system carried water from the Grand Coulee Dam to a total of 66,000 acres. In the 50s all the way to the 80s, they were building pumping plants and infrastructure. In the 90s and 2000s, they were still waiting for the infrastructure to get to the rest of the area, and deep wells were used while they waited. More on that in a minute. Irrigation by the numbers, there's a million 29,000 acres authorized for the project. Not all of these have water yet. That's twice the size of Delaware, for those of you that have been to that part of the East Coast. So that's Grant, Adams, Franklin, Lincoln, and a part of Douglas counties. 750,000 acres are already irrigated. That's like three quarters of the way done, 75%. There's three irrigation districts. One of them, of course, is called Othello Home, which is the East Columbia Basin Irrigation District. There's 300 miles of main canals, 2,000 miles of lateral, 3,500 miles of drains and wasteways, all with less than 3% of the flow in the Columbia River being taken out. That's a lot. It's a lot of benefit for not a lot of water. But that's not the only use. Irrigation is not the only thing we're doing here with the Columbia Basin Project. That dam and the project itself allows power, the largest hydroelectric power facility in the U.S., flood control, you're welcome, Portland, municipal and industrial uses, which I know you guys are fully aware of. There's recreation, which I think you also are fully aware of. But there's also the fish and habitat, wildlife habitat, that bring in a lot of the recreationists. But we're not done yet. It's only three quarters of the way completed. So while the last quarter is waiting to be done, there was a moratorium on the Columbia River for a decade or so. So while they were waiting for all that to occur, the Department of Ecology, the one you were talking about earlier, issued deep well permits to lots of farmers so they could dig wells into the Odessa Aquifer so that they could actually water their lands while they waited for the infrastructure, the surface water, to get to them. Well, that's the same aquifer that's used by a lot of communities. A lot of communities.
and homes. So in the days of, let's see, it started with Governor Locke, and then Governor Gregoire picked it up and really ran with it. There was a memorandum of understanding to replace that well water with surface water that started at the local with irrigation districts and the municipalities, the state, like not only the governor, but the Department of Ecology, and of course at the federal level, because this is a federally owned project. So reclamation was at the table. And they all agreed that, you know, this is going to be an environmental disaster in the making if we don't get those farmers off the aquifer, on the surface water, so we can maintain the aquifer for the communities. So that's that whole red circle you see there. That's pretty much all the Columbia Basin project, but the Odessa sub-area special study is within that red circle, and that study was done so that we could find out exactly what was going to be impacted if, in fact, we built more canals that went into that area. It's called the Odessa Groundwater Replacement Program, acronym AGWRP. Odd, but it works. The idea is to build infrastructure, the canals, the siphons, and everything that goes with it, with state investment of money, like $126 million to date, federal buy-in, they haven't put so much money in, like, not much. And like the rest of the Columbia Basin project, the farmers pay all this back when it's built, which is exactly the way the project has been built to date. So something's built, farmers, they get a benefit of it, it's paid back over time. But also way benefit, it saves communities, including this one. So my ask, and why I'm here at all, is our board said, you know what, this is ridiculous. We're begging for people to be members for the league every single year, and in the meantime, we have an aquifer going dry. So it's threatening communities. I mean, think about Warden, if you really want to think about a community that has got a challenge by not having access to that aquifer in the long term. So the board challenged us and said, okay, great, we want to be a voice, we want to raise our voice for this whole area, that this is a problem, we need to do something about it at the state, but mostly at the federal level, they need to hear us. Somebody needs to continue to hear us. But we can't keep doing it on a shoestring budget. I mean, we're less than $200,000 for the league. And the board said, okay, what's it going to take? So we built a five-year budget, and we put together a whole program that the board saw and passed and said, okay, here's our operating budget, but here's the budget for voices that we need to go out and raise funds for. And they also said, listen, we can't keep going back to the same people we've been asking for membership for. That's ridiculous. Definition of insanity. Keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So we've started really focusing on organizations that fund these kinds of projects, foundations, large communities that right now are starting to see some of this during COVID, post-COVID investment of monies, as we see infrastructure monies coming in, and as we see economic development monies coming in, and rebuilding monies coming in. So our ask is, help us raise money, but also agree to be a voice. Agree to be a really loud, nagging voice about why this is important at the regional, local level that gives us the ability to yell even louder at the national level, because that's the only way we're going to continue to be heard until somebody does something about it. So we're calling, push hard and be loud. You know, especially right now, the administration is really focusing on infrastructure, including water. And we're like, agriculture, water, infrastructure is what we want. So that's where we've been yelling. So this is where the plan includes connecting more citizens to the cause. I mean, a lot of this is just easy. None of this is rocket science. It's certainly not as complicated as a lab. So, yeah, no. This is just making sure we do lots more of what we're already doing, increasing outreach with media. So all these communities and the ports and the counties have the ability to, like, sign on letters and, you know, be louder as we continue to focus on our messages. So, but we need to bring communities in. We need to make sure that city councils and the community organizations are able to take the tools that we can create so they can be loud also. We want to push for even more state support. These guys have been great at the state level. They really have invested a lot of money, but sorry, we're going to need more at the legislative cycle level. So in fact, tomorrow we've got legislators coming in
for a tour of lateral 47-5, which is the first one that was built, so they can see actually what was been done with the project in the first step of expanding on top of the Odessa subarea aquifer. And we need to find more federal support. I mean, we need to take our state legislators to D.C. so they can start being louder than they have been to our congressional officials. But it's not just finding officials to champion our efforts like the congressional delegation. Our Washington congressional delegation has been great. Last week, 2 weeks ago, Congressman Newhouse, you know, was on our tour. Senators Murray and Cantwell have been fabulous in trying to help us. We need more people than just Washington State in terms of congressional delegation. And we need to expand that awareness all the way through the executive branch, Department of Interior, even more in the Department of Interior, and with other national coalitions that worry about water. So my plea is, water for thousands of people is at risk. We want you to add your voice to water, but also help us fundraise to do that, because I can yell and scream a whole lot, but I'm one voice. And unless we have the funds to invest in the process, I'm only going to be one voice, and that's ridiculous, because I'm not, even though I'm really loud, I'm not loud enough to make enough of a difference at the state, and especially federal level, to say we need infrastructure money for water and agriculture here and now. And there's lots of hoops to jump through. It's an exceedingly complicated project. But we need to really focus on a few main points and say this is an environmental disaster in the making if we don't get these farmers off that aquifer so that it can be saved for communities and people. So water for families, for communities, jobs, fishing, wildlife, processors, boating, even for ducks. Thanks for your time. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
City Council.
I did want to make a comment and add on. There are farmers on some of these lateral projects for the AgWARP that are begging right now. They're putting their own money up to get going without any promise of any federal or state assistance. They're saying, we need it. We're pumping air right now. We've got to be able to grow our crops. So I've sat in a couple of those meetings where they're...
Well, and there's farmers who have... They've taken their wells and they've drilled deeper, or they've had to drill a new well. It blew my mind the first time I started asking questions about drilling a new well, when they're like, yeah, it's $1 million and you may or may not get water. Yeah. I can't even wrap my head around that. That's why these people are willing to truly put a lot of money into it, because they have to. They have no options. They can go back to dry land, but that's really not an option. Not even for your coffers, that's not a good idea.
What are you asking us to do besides be the voice?
Well, you're not going to be the only voice. I am taking this ask on the road. We are asking a lot of foundations for funds. Like I said, we're trying to get at least $125,000 a year for 5 years. So it's a total of about $625,000. In the perfect world, I'd like to raise $1 million so that we can spend a good couple hundred thousand every single year to be nagging people, if that's what it takes, to try to get this resolved and to just keep at it. So what I'm trying to figure out in terms of the numbers is, for example, there's another processor in this community that has a foundation that we're asking funds for. We have this entire project broke down into three goals, and we're trying to find different foundations, different communities or municipalities that can focus in on different parts of that. So for you, I mean, I'm going to take whatever I can get, but if the league can figure out the main communities that are impacted by this project, or also that are impacted by the project, even if they're not losing water, they care that this happens so we can get on with completing the project. So I'm going to throw out like $10,000 probably for most of the communities in this area, but I also know that there's a budget issue. But as these funds come in, sort of, I want to say post-COVID, which I guess apparently we're really not post-COVID, but it's being able to invest, whether or not this is an environmental project, an economic development project, a community project, I mean, it kind of fits every single box you want to check. So.
Yeah. Well, we are definitely being impacted by the whole situation because, I mean, we're in the process of going through and doing a ASC project.
ASR.
Thank you. ASC.
One of those acronyms.
ASR project. Which basically we're having to pump water back into our aquifers to store it to be able to have enough water for everybody to use. So we're definitely impacted by the aquifer issues. I for one, would love to lend our voice to this. And if we can work it out in our budget.
I would take a multiple year, but if you can do a 3 to 5 year, I'd be giddy.
Okay, we're already a member.
Yes, you are a member, so.
So what does that membership cost?
It varies by year. So organizations, both everything from processors to individuals to farmers to whatever, we have basically a menu. And the lower levels are all by numbers of employees, and then the categories above, I think it's $2,500, is basically you pick your category that's either based on your budget or your ability to pay or the impact the organization has on you. And I don't know historically, I didn't bring that information on what you guys have done.
We donate $6,000 a year and then $600 for the membership.
So if she wants $10,000 from us, that's an additional $4,000 to what we already donate.
Well, you could look at it that. Well, yes, it depends on how you want to slice it.
I ain't gonna give you $10,000 on top of the $6,000 I'm already giving you. So don't go there.
Well, I said I don't know your budget situation, so that's not, I'm not going there, but
well,
that's your decision.
I think you heard that there was federal funding that was given to communities, and I think that's why you're here, but I don't hold that against you. I'm just saying that.
You can call me opportunistic.
Yeah, and but anyway, you're asking for a 3-year commitment. That commitment from the federal government was 2 years. And
1 year, guaranteed.
Guaranteed 1 year, but there is a say. It's been said that there may be another one in the following year. But we give you 6 now, so to make 10, we could come up with another 4.
About another 4 for 3 years commitment for the next 3 years, or 5 years, or 40 years, or I guess. You were asking for 3 years, right?
That would be awesome. But also, it gives me the ability
$12 additional $1,000
to then utilize your name to say, this is what Othello did, right? So it throws down, not necessarily the gauntlet, but I mean, it gives a placeholder for other communities that we go after. You know, plus, I mean, I didn't even talk about bridges. I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to find some bridge funding.
John actually gave you the 10 grand. He just gave you 12, just split it up over 3 years, right? An additional 4 grand a year.
Spencer, right?
Is that the way I understood it?
We'll include that in our budget. And, yeah, I mean, you know, hearing it the way you say it tonight, I mean, it's different when you think about just how important this really is. Don't you just hate how government always has to work in crisis
mode? Well, and yes and no.
Well, sometimes that's the only time anything gets done, which is, I guess, a good thing, but it also causes you to scramble. And when you see how important that this really is to Othello, which we're the city council of Othello, we certainly have a lot of self-interest in seeing this farmers getting off the aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gina said, we've actively been pursuing a long-term water supply here in Othello. And I mean, we're 5 or 6 years into it,
it takes a long time to develop. Water is always going to be an issue, and we're not even at the deadline yet, at the finish line. So the water fight has to be fought on multiple levels. So we certainly support the league, and we're going to include this in our budget. And I just want to thank you for coming tonight, because I think it was, one, it was informative, two, wish you, we could have gotten you on earlier, you and Lucinda both. We just had a little bit of business to take care of, so.
Oh, that's fine. We understand. Not a problem. We thank you for your time and the investment.
Are you going to be here after the meeting?
I could be.
So I'd like to talk to you a little bit.
How many towns are you going to besides Othello?
Well, we'll hit the towns, also the ports. We do county commissioners because we have the county commissions also on our board. So they also contribute. So we're going out to all those, the entities, right? What we don't want to do is go back to individual farmers, individual members now. And honestly, some of the people that have been our biggest supporters organizationally, because those are the ones that have really, they've invested, they've provided the insurance policy up to this point. Now that, you know, we're in crisis mode and there's enough blood on the floor, so to speak, people are starting to go, oh, well, okay, this is kind of an issue. Well, yes. So now that it is, we're trying to take those people that really haven't had any or much skin in the game to say, okay, now's your time. Now's the time to step up.
So you're going like Moses Lake, Grant County, Adams County, Quincy, Freda, everything in
everything Tri-Cities? That, all those counties, yeah.
Are you going to Tri-Cities, mm-hmm. all those up there?
Mm-hmm. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I did the Port of Kennewick. They have additional issues because they also deal with the snakes, so they're worried about those dams.
What's the projected cost of the finish?
Say again?
What is the projected cost to finish the project?
The Columbia Basin project?
Yeah.
I should come down and do another presentation. I have an entire document that we put together that talks about that exact issue. Not only the steps required, but the time it takes for each step and the projected cost of the step based on the cost of when it was done the first time, but it's in the billions.
So, but basically, here in this community, in this area, the big fight today, right now, the water's there. The availability of the water is in the canal. It's getting it from the canal to the farmer. And John said that there's farmers out there that want to do the work themselves, pay for it out of their own pocket to do the money, you know, I mean, get it to their farm. But the irrigation districts have to be in control of it. So they can't allow that to happen. But the funding that they have to pay for through the district is a significant cost. And that's where, as far as I'm concerned, right now today, what the state needs to do is step in and say, that's it, you're done. You cannot use these groundwater certificates another year and force the farmers to come to a reconciliation with the district and get it done.
You're not wrong.
Well, I think you're seeing movement in that direction. I don't want to speak out of turn, but working on the 47.5 as the project manager, and then the project manager on the 22.1, 79.2, and 86.4 that are currently in, undergoing and moving forward. I think you're starting to see that movement a lot more so than when I first started with the district mm-hmm. a few years ago. I think it was real indicative of what you had just said. There might have been that little, but.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I didn't go into this kind of detail in the beginning because it just makes this story so much longer, but before, there, all the geese were not flying in formation at the ground level, okay? So when we first got this project off the ground, there were a million different ideas about how it was going to be accomplished and what process we should take and who's doing what. And we had, that was the reason we have voices. The board appointed a task force to say, we need to go listen to everybody, bring everything back,
figure out what the voice is, and then agree on a single voice to go forward, or we're not going to get a thing. And that was the impetus and the genesis behind the whole voices effort to begin with, because we would go to D.C. and we would talk to any number of Washington State congressional delegation, either staff or the electeds, and they'd say, wait a minute, we just heard from so-and-so yesterday that said this. And I heard from so-and-so last week that said this other thing. And then we come in and go, well, yeah, but okay. You know, and that puts us in a really awkward position to either say, well, they're not accurate, or they didn't tell you the whole truth, or but they didn't know about this other thing that makes it even more complicated because it's a federal project. And you have to abide by those federal laws in a federal project, which makes it more time, more expensive, more complicated. And in the meantime, the East, in my opinion, ends up being fodder between the feds and the farmers. Because
yeah,
they're like...
You add the federal government into anything, it gets a little slower.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, right? We're dealing with Bureau of Reclamation within the Department of Interior. So it's not like we're going to change law overnight. So we have to operate within a system and try to... I mean, this is where lobbyists came from, right? This is why this organization was created, to help facilitate the process.
Oh, I enjoy the CBDL. As a board member of the CBDL, I enjoy everything you guys do. So there's no bias there. If I didn't think it was good, I wouldn't.
Oh, don't worry. I know. When you don't agree, you tell me.
Yeah. You guys are a great organization, and what you're doing for the farmers and the communities, I know it's appreciated. I hear it from people all the time. So.
Well, there is no other stakeholder group.
Yeah.
For the Columbia Basin Project. We're
exactly.
It. So.
Plus, we get a visit with you. Every 3 months, right?
Just call.
No.
So sorry, you guys have been more than patient. So thank you for your time.
Thanks a bunch, Vicky.
I'll go sit down, and we can either talk like later, or you can also just text me.
Next item. Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Rosenda. So moving along in our agenda, item 4F is the city participation for the 14th Avenue curbing. I think we had one discussion, Sean, about this, or is this a new discussion?
This is just the culmination of what we had
discussed. All discussions.
Yeah. We had taken this to the Water Sewer Street Committee about what we wanted, how the city decided not to participate in the construction for half of 14th Avenue. But we did want curbing to be put in, and so they were not. We decided it was not their responsibility to put curbing on the east side. Staff was directed to work with the developer to get a cost. We got a cost, but then here's the cost for curb, but there's also could be some engineering costs and da da da. And continued to ask for that. Finally, just got that information last week. The concrete guys should be in town tomorrow morning. They've got about 2 to 3 days worth of concrete, and then they would be working on this section. So the cost that we got from the contractor is $17.50 a foot. There's 763 feet of curb that would extend from with the existing curb that currently ends at Olympia Street, and they added on $2,300 for the engineering and staking of that curbing. So that would continue the existing profile cross-section of the road through phase 3 of the Sand Hill Estates development. That's a quick summary if you have any questions.
Isn't it norm or policy that the developer would put that in? If he came in, he would put that in on both sides of the street? No?
No, the property owner on the other side of the street would be responsible for the...
Once they started doing...
There's no property owner on the other side of the irrigation.
Yeah,
okay.
Irrigation.
I was trying to quickly go back to that meeting. I know Councilman Garza had talked about it, and I couldn't remember what we had decided on. So, all right.
The development's original request is we pay for the east half of the road and Water Sewer Street Committee, and then we eventually brought it to City Council, said, nope, we're not participating for those road costs. You have to build the whole thing. Yes, it's not like a typical development where you'd eventually set up a reimbursement and potentially get some of your costs back. With this, with the canal going along the east side of the road, there is no potential for reimbursement. Because this is a unique street, it was decided the curbing, the city would participate in that work, because right now the water just sheets off into the ditch. That ditch handles the stormwater.
And it is curbed up to that point, right?
It is curbed up to...
So it'd just be a continuation of the curbing up to the end of the development. And we talked about leaving it open. We talked about open areas where it would just...
So the curbing will have, what we believe, four knockouts where that water will still go into the ditch at the low points and at intermediate spots so that it hopefully is still dissipated over the area.
So where would this funding come from, Spence?
Street. Either street or the...
Do we have the funding available?
Yeah.
So we're talking of $15,652.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Any discussion? Do you guys want to make a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the city participation in the amount of $15,652.50.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Now I'll move to item 4G, which is a resolution to award the official newspaper for the city of Othello. Tanya?
Good evening, Council. So in front of you is a resolution to award an official newspaper for the city of Othello. Each year, the city is required to designate a newspaper for advertising. And on July 21st, we called for bids. We only received one from the Columbia Basin Herald Sun Tribune. Their bid per single column is $8.15, which is what we already expense. We currently expense approximately $5,100 annually for legal advertisements, and awarding the contract to the Columbia Basin Herald Sun Tribune would give staff flexibility to advertise when trying to meet deadlines, because we will be able to advertise Monday through Friday instead of just on the Wednesday paper. I've confirmed that the Columbia Basin Herald Sun Tribune meets all the qualifications requirements to award the contract to them. So staff recommends to award this contract to Columbia Basin Herald Sun Tribune. Does anyone have questions?
Thank you, Tanya. City Council, I'd entertain a motion.
Make a motion to award the Columbia Basin Herald Sun Tribune the contract through September 1, 2022.
And the resolution.
Thank you.
All those in favor of the resolution and the contract signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And we're going to move to item 4H, which is the fireworks contract for the Christmas parade. Last year, the city council had postponed the 4th of July fireworks and elected to have them on the same night as the Holiday Committee's Christmas parade and celebration. There was a lot of encouragement and enthusiasm for that later show. So we're back tonight on behalf of the Holiday Committee to make a $10,000, in the attachments, it was originally $7,500, and I said that we should probably go with a $10,000 show. This was with Western Display Fireworks. And so we're just asking the council if they would like to see an annual fireworks show at the Holiday Committee every year.
Yep. Yes.
I think it was a hit within the community. It
should be included in a budget every year. Yes. with the 4th of July.
Terrific. I got a question. Is there Western Fireworks the only people that do that? Is there other places you can buy from?
There is. One thing, however, is that Western Display was one of the... we're actually very fortunate to have them. They're a
can't remember. I think that company started like in 1950 or 1960. And so it's been through a couple of generations. And they were able to, all the different times we made the changes in when we were going to have them, they went with us. And then this year, for the 4th of July, what they did is they basically gifted the city all of the mortars for not only the 4th of July show, but any other show that we have, which saves us the cost of transportation, the delivery of the mortars. So I'm sold on them after they did that. So anyway.
Plus, if we have this contract and the 4th of July contract, won't we get even more
fireworks?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is one that you would get more bang for your
buck. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
You just got to hope for that mist that was there on Christmas.
So cool.
I mean, it made it look like that was
everybody
an awesome show.
The
you didn't like it? I like
it. It's Christmas. I just, New Year's Eve, yeah. You know, we let off a big deal because it's New Year's Eve, like they do in New York and places like that, but Christmas, it's Christmas.
Yes,
it's a quiet.
Rudolph was booked up, so he couldn't do a flyby.
I honestly believe that is going to start bringing people to town. I do. I think I told Mayor earlier.
And it makes sense when we're having the festival to have it.
Exactly. That festival has so much potential here. Mm-hmm. It's just huge potential.
Okay. Well, then I would like to see the city staff look at a city float, a parade float.
They used to have one.
I want to see floats in parades, not a bunch of cars and trucks and police cars with sirens. And
ride the float?
Yep.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But we used to have a float that went to all the different parades and competed and did good.
I want to
disappear one year.
I want to see. I want to see a hayride.
caroling around town. I'm
like
an advocate for all of it.
Things like that.
Put a hay trailer behind my truck.
I'm all for it.
Okay, let's get back to the motion.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the contract with Western Display
for $10,000.
Yes.
Second.
Further discussion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you.
So are we going to look into having a float, Mayor? I'm with Councilman Lawless.
So the float before was volunteers, so.
I think they mostly are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Find us a trailer, Mark. We'll build something.
Okay, there's also the option the city could take that stage that we have at down at Public Works that's used for the 4th of July. We could roll that thing down Main Street. That would be our little flatbed.
My idea of a parade when I was a kid was marching bands, drill teams, floats, All you see in our parades are cars and, a couple of horses and
the grand
and the fire department and the police department.
Well, Tanya's the head of that committee, and Tanya, I'm sure, is listening. So
she's making notes.
Yeah, she's taking.
I'm with Councilman Lawless. I'd love to have a float. That's fun.
Okay, so in all this, you guys are confusing me. Did we vote on the motion?
Yeah. Yes, it's done.
All right. So let's move now to our unfinished business, item 5.
It's not unfinished business, but it was past business, and a lot of community members reached out to me and thanked the city for the handicap parking spots at Kiwanis Park and the rapid response. I think that was done the next day after we talked about it. And so there were the few handicapped folks that really wanted to see something. I'm real grateful, so I wanted to pass that along to council and you, Mayor.
Thank you. Have also out here in front of City Hall.
Have we started the the little deals in, on Hemlock yet? The center?
Yeah,
center.
When are those going to be going down?
Well, we're done with the paving deal.
Chip seal.
Chip seal.
Yeah.
So are we going
to... We were going to bring a presentation to this meeting, but because of so many items, next meeting we'll bring it to get final approval to move forward with
it. So we have to decide if we want a diamond or an octagon?
Oh, those diamonds, yep. Those diamonds
even,
look good.
Even there's some flexible ones that we could even make a circle, so we'll present those ideas.
To cool. Oh, a circle would be awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Sorry.
They are called traffic circles.
Yeah. Circle would be good. But I liked how you had it laid out. You know, you went out and painted them on. They paved over them.
Well, they're still there.
They are?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still there on 9th, right, in, right next to my house, but the one on the other end got kind of paved over.
Yeah, they were not supposed to go to the intersection.
Yeah, they did.
Okay, cool. So we can expect that next meeting.
Awesome.
Okay. Like to have a Park and Rec Committee meeting to talk about the Farmers Market Business Incubator, and I'd like to have it either Wednesday afternoon at 4 or Friday morning at 10.
Friday. Wednesday, I've got appointments in Tri-Cities.
You can do anything at noon?
We could. Let's see what... We go Thursday at noon. Wednesday at noon?
No, I've got appointments in Tri-Cities.
Okay, I got a job Friday. That I work at.
Thursday?
So 10 o'clock's pretty difficult unless it's noon or...
I'll sit in for you if there's no alternate.
No, I think these guys wanted to be part of that. So, okay, so I've got Wednesday, Thursday.
Well, Thursday.
Thursday at noon?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go Thursday at noon.
City Hall.
City Hall. Okay, who's the alternate?
For Parks? That would be me.
I don't know if Angel, is Angel gone all week or is he just gone today? Okay, we'll check. If he's not, we'll have you come and sit in. Sure. Let's go to our new business. Is there any new business to come before the council tonight? Okay, item 7 is the council is going to receive the interim legislative report, fire department report, the building and planning report, and the planning commission reports. And with no further business to come before the council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:03 p.m.